Hey, we're in week 5 of Family Game Plan. Would you guys say Family Game Plan? Have you guys enjoyed this series? Has it been helpful so far? I hope this series has been really helpful. What we've been saying is simply this, that any family can be difficult, and we all know that family can be difficult, but we also know, and we're saying from the scriptures, we understand that every family gets better and can be better with a good plan, and we've been taking it a step even further to say every family can be better with a God plan, that when we pay attention to what God has to say about the family and for the family, we get better as families. We get stronger, we get closer, we have better relationships in our family if we pay attention to what God has to say about the family. And so we said from the very beginning, the first week, we started out with this crazy idea that God has an ideal and we have our reality. And instead of dropping our reality to pay attention to God's ideal and dropping God's ideal to make us feel okay about our reality, we're going to be okay living in the tension while we strive towards God's ideal and work towards God's ideal. But we're also going to have incredible grace for people and for all of us who understand that our reality doesn't match up to God's ideal. Does that make sense? So we're going to live in that tension. And as we've lived in that tension, we've talked about some really big ideas. The second week, we talked about the idea of conflict. And we said that from all of us, we experience conflict at some point within the family. And we said the big deal with conflict is that we can blame, but it does nothing to actually bring us to a place that's better in our families. But we said there is a way where if we take responsibility for our part of the conflict, we actually move towards a place where we are also willing to help play our part in resolving the conflict. We said something that was kind of a little bit of a rhyme. It said, if we own our slice, we have to, anybody remember it? Play nice. Good. All right. One person. Good. Justin's going to take responsibility for this family. Okay, great. So if we own our slice, we have to play nice. That if we take responsibility for our part that we caused in the conflict, we will be more likely to play our part in resolving the conflict. Then 2 weeks ago, we talked to married people. Do we have any married people in there? If you're a married person in the room, can you just say, yeah? Yeah, okay, if you're married. So we talked to you guys, and we talked about 3 choices that we feel like God wants us to make when you look at Scripture, when it talks to husbands and wives. We said that God wants us to mutually submit. In other words, I put you first, and you put me first, and I put you first, and you put me first, and we put each other first, and no one ever goes into the restaurant because we're just opening doors for each other to say, no, you go, and we just stand there forever saying, no, you go, and everyone dies of hunger. It's great. It's a beautiful marriage, okay? But we said that's God's picture, that we would mutually submit, and everyone puts each other first, that's how God designed us to function as husbands and wives, where we submit to each other. We also talked about the idea of mutually valuing each other, that sometimes we can get to the point where we're like, they were so valuable when we were dating, and 10 years into marriage, we go, ah. But that the same person that was in... The same person that was incredibly valuable while we were dating is the same person 5 years into marriage, 10 years into marriage, 15 years into marriage, 20 years. Often they didn't change. How we see them and how we view them changes. And so we said God wants us to view them on the 10th and the 15th and the 20th and the 30th and the 37th year of marriage the same way we viewed them as incredibly valuable while we were dating. And then we said the final thing is that God wants us to mutually trust one another. That I trust that you're looking out for we just like I'm looking out for we. That you're going to take care of and you're going to guard and you're going to protect us and our relationship. So I'm going to trust you. So we mutually submit, we mutually value, we mutually trust. And then last week we talked to all the parent people. Can I hear from all the parent people in here today? Okay, so let me give you a cue. If you're a parent person in the room, say yeah. Okay, so we got some parent people in there. And Pastor Crispin did such an incredible job last week of talking from Scripture, some stuff that I think most people and most pastors don't talk about when it comes to parenting. The idea of equal concern but different treatment, I thought was so amazing. I mean, it just really, that was something that actually hit me and hit Jalen pretty good, because I have a tendency when I look at my little girl Noble to think, well, she's exactly like me. She's going to want to be treated exactly like me. She's awesome. You know, she's going to want to be treated exactly like me. And Jalen looks at her and thinks, well, she's just the spitting image of me. She's going to want to be treated exactly like me. And what we took away, the one of the big things from last week was like, hey, she's not going to be either one of us. She's going to be Noble. And we have to understand and learn and pay attention so that we know how to parent Noble, not a little Chris or a little Jalen, but that we're going to pay attention to how to parent Noble. And Noble said, amen. Okay, it's beautiful. So that was one of the things that we, but then the idea of launching your children and making sure to pay attention that we launch our children well, I think so good. So that's where we've been. That's what we've been talking about, and that's where we've been in this series to kind of review and catch up in case anybody missed this thing. And so for the last couple of weeks, what we've done is we've said, hey, if you're married, if you're a parent, this is for you. And we've said, if you're single, kind of pay attention, because, you know, Pastor Crispin said last week, you know, you may be at at the sports bar right now, but Dairy Queen's coming. You know, he kind of had that southern drawl thing, and it was beautiful and it was amazing. And he says oil funny. He says all. And he thinks I say it funny because I say it right. Anyway, so we've kind of said, if you're single, pay attention because someday this is going to be your reality. But today, I want to flip that script and say, today we're going to specifically talk to those of you who are single, dating, engaged. Maybe you find yourself single again. Maybe you find yourself divorced. Maybe you find yourself in kind of like, I'm not really sure what I am. And that's an interesting place to be. And so we're going to talk specifically to you today. And if you're married, if you're parenting in the room today, let me just say this. What we're going to talk about today is incredibly important for you to pay attention because this isn't just a single thing. This, first of all, may explain some of the tensions that you felt as you're a married person, as you're parenting, and it may also trigger some wires that go, oh, you know what? That's something that I missed along the way. I need to pay some attention to that. So we're going to talk specifically to single people, but married people, parenting people, don't stop paying attention. Don't stop believing. Now, today, so talking to all the single people, let me just know where, if you're a single, dating, engaged, single again person, let me just hear you say, yeah. All right. Now, some of you are like, I don't want to say yeah because I don't find it particularly exciting. I would prefer if people didn't laugh when I asked them out. I would prefer if people actually, like if I move that someone actually looks twice, I would like that. That would be nice. I don't want to be the single person. I kind of want, like, I hope that someday that's a different thing for me. So we're going to talk to you guys today, and I just think this is so important to talk about. One of the things that happens, for many of you, you've only known me as a married person. Some of you, you're like, I don't even know you yet. Well, I'm a married person, but what happens sometimes is when you only know a person in one season, you can forget that they actually like experienced other seasons of their life. So I just want to let you know that right now I'm a married person, but at one point in my life, I was a single person. I know, it's hard to believe. You look at me like, wow, you're such a catch. Your eyes, they shimmer like the sea. How could you have been on the market? I understand that that's a big question in life. You know, but I was once a single person, and I was a single person for a good long time as an adult. I got married, Jaylen and I was 28, and she was younger. And so I was single for 10 years as an adult male, and I, there's a couple things I thought I did kind of well, and a couple things I thought I could have probably done better. One of the things that I wish had gone a little bit differently, when I was 22 and 23, there was a string for about 14 months. There were 7 different girls that I took out on a date or a couple dates, or we had a short-term relationship. And every single one of them, when we stopped seeing each other, within a month, they went out on a date with the next guy, and with the guy that they would end up being engaged to within 6 months of their first date. So in other words, I ended up being the guy before the guy 7 times in a row. 7 girls that I took out married the next guy, which means that 7 girls spent some time with me and they were all ready to take steps towards marriage, but after spending an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours or a couple dates with me, went, pass. Which, in case you didn't know, that makes you feel really good about yourself. You know, you're like, yay, all right, congratulations, Chris, you're doing really. I mean, the first time you're like, wow, that's really good for them, congratulations. The second time you're like, that's good for them too, congratulations. The third time you're going, what the heck? You know, like, I mean, like, you know, what's going on with me? And so there were some things there. I thought, you know, okay, got to look at myself, maybe do some things different. But at the same time, I think I did some things well. For one, I ended up married to a pretty awesome girl named Jaylen, who was a Reeves, and now she's a Weiss, and we got a cute little baby. And there was other things that we did together. That we did actually as individuals while we were dating and before we were dating that I think have allowed us to experience early on in marriage a pretty healthy, pretty strong marriage. I mean, we have problems just like anybody has problems. We have issues just like everybody has issues. But we've gotten off to, I think, a pretty good start. And so today what I want to do for the most part is I want to talk about 3 decisions that we made as individuals before we got married that we made when we were single people that have set us up for success while we, as we moved into the early stages of marriage, and as we moved into the early stages of family life. And here's why I think this is so important to talk about. Now, today, when you think about culture today, people are waiting longer and longer and longer and longer to get married, right? I mean, the average age today, I think the last study I saw showed it was like 27 or 28 was like the average age now that people get married. Now, some of you, you're 23, 24, 25, and you feel like, oh my gosh, I thought I'd be married like years ago. I'm so behind. No, you're actually ahead of the curve still. That's great. Congratulations. People are getting married later and later and later, and people are having kids later and later and later. But at the end of the day, most people are still getting married, and most people are still having kids. Most people are still getting married. Most people are still having kids, which means if you're single right now, chances are family is still someday in your future. Family is someday in your future, and the choices that you make today and the choices that I make, that I made when I was single, the choices that we make when we're single all play a part in building the family that we will someday build. You think, we all tend to think, well, no, I'll start building the family when I actually start building the family, but the choices that we make today influence the family that we will someday build. So a couple of thoughts that I have here about being single. Number one is that singleness can be a blessing or it can be a burden. You decide what you make it. First of all, some of you go, no, man, I hate being single. Single is awful. Like I hate when I'm not dating someone. I'd love to be married. Singleness sucks. Singleness is terrible. It's terrible. And here's the thing. It will be terrible as long as you let it be terrible. As long as you mentally think this is terrible, singleness will be terrible for you. If you decide, you know what, this season can be a blessing. This season can offer me opportunities that I may never have again. Singleness may offer me opportunities that I may be able to travel and do ministry. I may be able to travel and do mission trips. I'm more able to do this as a single person than I'll ever be in the rest of my life. It can be a blessing. It can be a burden, and you get to decide what it will be. It can be a blessing, it can be a burden. The second thing I think is this, it can be a long season or a short season, but the season doesn't define you. In other words, the fact that you're single right now does not define you. What you do in this season will define you. Does that make sense? The singleness, the fact that you are in a relationship, not in a relationship, dating, engaged, whatever, that isn't really what defines you. What you do in the season of singleness, that is what will define you. That's what will define these years. That's what will define when you look back and go, man, that was really good or that was a waste of time. What you do in this season will be what defined the season. And the third thing is this, that someday you will look back at your singleness and you will either be grateful for some decisions that you made or you will regret some decisions that you made and some habits that you built. And the room got really quiet. Because here's the thing, someday you will marry someone probably, and someday you will be a parent to someone probably. And that season probably will come for you. And this season, these years, these 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, whatever it is, these years will someday be a memory and something that you look back on. And you will either look back on it and be grateful, like, wow, there were some things I did there that set me up for success in the early days of marriage, in the early days of parenting, that set me up to have a better start. Or you will look back on this season and go, you know what? There are some things I really wish I had done differently. There are some relationships I wish I had never said yes to. There are some dates I should have just said no. There are some habits I should have never started. There are some things that I did when I was this age that I just really should never have gotten involved with, and it messed up some things in the early days of marriage or in the early years of parenting. It might have even messed up a marriage or some parenting. And so here's the thing. All of that to say this, I think that leaves us with a question, and it's simply this, that if that is all true, if someday this will be a memory, if someday this will be a season that built us to something, here's the question, how do we make the most of the season that we're in to be prepared for the season to come? Not that this season is a bad season, not that this season is a season to be looked down upon, but if someday this season is going to be a memory, and if someday this season is going to be the foundation for the rest of my life, what do we do in this season to make sure that this season was a solid one, that lays a solid foundation, that moves us towards a healthy ability to have relationships and be good at being married and be good at being a parenting and a family person? If someday future family is coming, what should we be doing today to prepare us for that season when family is our reality? Does that make sense? So today we're going to answer that question. And to get us started, there's a few things I want to make sure we address. First one is a couple of thoughts that I think are super, super, super important to understand. First of all is this. There are very few married people problems. I thought maybe there'd be a few amens from a couple married people there, but I think we're going to get a few amens here after we put up the next part. There are very few married people problems. There are a lot of single people problems that get carried into marriages. In other words, there's a lot of stuff that single people never addressed, never dealt with, never confronted, and when they carry it into marriage, these single people with problems and the single person with problems, they get married, and oh no, we have problems. We have problems. Our marriage is problems. Our marriage has so many problems. We have so many problems. Well, no, your marriage doesn't have problems. You have problems. And that can either be really encouraging or really discouraging. I don't know which one it actually is. I think it's probably a little bit of both. Like, for one, it's like, hey, your marriage isn't as screwed up as you think. Like, awesome, great. Sad news is you're more screwed up than you think. Oh, sad. you know? And so here's the thing. Married people have problems. Married people problems are like, hey, we have one tube of toothpaste, and I squeeze from the end, and she squeezes from the middle. Oh, it just drives me crazy. Who's taking the trash out? I don't know. No one. I mean, like, there's all, like, those are married people problems, right? I mean, there's very few married people problems. There's a lot of single people problems that get carried into marriage, and then they end up feeling like married people problems. Let me give you a few examples. Well, I just have difficulty trusting them. Well, do you have difficulty trusting everybody? Well, yeah, but I mean, yeah. Oh, maybe that's not a marriage problem. That's maybe a you thing. Or you know what? Hey, we can't agree on anything. That's most likely not a marriage problem. That really probably means that two single people who never learned the idea of compromise and the value of compromise got together and still couldn't compromise. That's not a marriage people problem. That's a single people problem that never got addressed. Or you know what? Hey, we have communication issues. That's most likely not a marriage issue. That's most likely not a marriage problem. That is single person with communication issues, married single person with communication issues, and when they get married, it feels like the marriage has communication issues, but it's really Johnny and Jill got married, and they had their own communication issues, and now, guess what? Their marriage feels like they have communication issues, but it's not their marriage, it's just them. What this should teach us is simply this, that we, as single people, it is not the time to look forward to and think, well, man, you know, I'll just be better at all this and then our marriage won't have any problems. No, this is the time to look at life and say, hey, whatever issues I have, I don't want to carry it into a future marriage. I don't want to carry it into that because I don't want that disgusting thing in me that I try to cover up, that I try to hide. I don't want that to affect and influence and break apart a marriage someday. There are very few married people. There's a lot of single people problems that get carried into marriages. Now, here's the second one. Family is not a solver of problems. Future family is not a solver of problems. In other words, some people look towards and they go, you know, hey, when I get married, when I get this, when I, you know, when we're, you know, established, whatever, then, you know, I probably won't have some of the problems that I have now. Future family is not a solver of problems. Future family is actually a magnifier of problems. It's a magnifier of problems. See, in other words, when we look and think, well, when this happens, that'll solve this problem, and this will solve, when I get married, that'll solve this problem. It doesn't solve the problem. It actually shines a big old spotlight on it, and it shines a big old magnifying glass, and it makes that thing that right now is small, it turns it into a big deal. The two biggest ways I've seen this play out in different people's lives is one, people say, well, okay, I'm kind of lonely, but someday I'll get married, and I'll have a wife, and I'll have a husband, and I won't be lonely anymore. No, you'll just be a lonely person who's married. And you'll be a lonely person who's married to a person that you're currently blaming because they didn't fix your loneliness. And let me ask you this, how do you think that works out? The answer is not well. See, the loneliness was something that could have been addressed, but we thought, you know what, well, marriage, that'll solve the problem. Marriage doesn't solve the problem. Marriage magnifies the problem. It makes it more clear. It puts a spotlight on it. It says, hey, you know what this problem that you should have dealt with? You should have dealt with it because it's bigger now. The second thing that I think happens so often, I'm going to pick on the guys in the room so you're all going to get really quiet, is that I meet so many guys who deal with, you know, addiction to porn or habits with porn, and they just think, well, you know, okay, but someday I'll get married and I'll be having so much sex with my amazingly, smokingly hot wife that I will never want or need porn again. Like, I mean, like, it's just, I mean, they think, well, that'll be, you know, marriage is going to be the solver of this habit that I have. And it's not a solver. What actually happens is these people then carry it into marriage, and now they have a wife and a porn addiction. And let me ask you a question. How well do you think those two play together? Not well. Not ever. It doesn't work out. The marriage doesn't solve it. It may put a little Band-Aid on it for a while, but it doesn't solve it. And so now you're a person with a wife and a porn addiction, and it doesn't work out. It is not a solver of problems. It is a magnifier of problems, which simply means this, that at some point along the line in our singleness, we have to, both of these thoughts I think should teach us that we should be the people who say, you know what, I want to confront my stuff, I want to confront my issues, confront my habits, confront anything that could cause problems someday, confront the stuff that could cause issues down the road in a family. I'm going to confront it now. Before it gets really big, before it affects someone else, before it affects a relationship, before it damages a marriage, before it breaks a relationship, before it breaks my kids' trust, before it does any of that, I'm going to deal with it now. Because I don't want to carry anything into marriage that I don't need to carry into marriage. I don't want to carry anything into parenting that I don't need to carry into parenting. So let's deal with it now. The bottom line that we're going to use today is simply this, that the less baggage that you carry into your future, the better your chances of building the future family that you hope for. In other words, someday you want to have a healthy marriage. You want to be a healthy parent. You want to get off to the start in marriage where you say, like, hey, things are good. Like, we get along. We talk about stuff. We have, like, we have our disagreements, but, like, we're off to a pretty good start. That's what you want. That's what I wanted. And so here's the thing. The less baggage that you carry into that season from this season, the better your chances are of building the family that you someday want to build and the family that you hope for now. And so the real thing is simply this, that the family that you want to build, it doesn't start the moment you get married, and it doesn't start the moment that you have a kid. It starts today. Because every single one of us is building something with our entire lives, and you carry you into marriage, and you carry you into parenting, and you carry you into grandparenting, that you carry you wherever you go. So we need to make sure that the me that I'm carrying into places, that I'm carrying into relationships, is worth carrying into relationships. Does that make sense? Okay, so today we're going to talk about three choices that I think are just so good to make when you're single, because it helps you to not carry baggage that you don't need to carry into the future. So I'm going to simply call them the three outs. The three outs, and it's simply this: that you get out, you stay out, and you clean out. See you guys later. Have a great week. No, just kidding. Like, so you get out, you stay out, you clean up. Chris, you tell me to get out. I'll get out. I'll get out right now. I'll get up and leave. Okay. So here's the thing. We're going to talk about these three individually. I'm going to try to do this as quickly as possible, but I'm also not going to rush things because I think this is so important. First one, get out of debt. Now, as many of you are in college right now, you're like, get out of, I keep racking up debt, like loans, 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 like that song, money, money, money. It's like, it's money, 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 yeah, that I'm taking on in debt, and I, like, in the negative, and I owe so much money, I think I'll probably be 97 years old, and I'll finally pay off a debt, and I'll die. Okay, so many of us, that's the way you think about life as a single person, or if it's not student loans, you're like, hey, I don't have student loans, and I'm not attached to anybody else, I'm going to buy a great car, and you would take on a car loan, or you hit college campus when you're 18, and someone says, hey, free t-shirt if you sign up for the credit card, and you think, well, I probably am going to need one of those anyway, and a free t-shirt's amazing. You know, no one ever gives away free t-shirts, so I have to get the credit card, and so you just start, you know, using it. You think, like, well, they just gave me $1,500. I don't ever have to pay that back, right? And you have to pay it back. And debt can be something that racks up and racks up and racks up and racks up. And here's why I think this is so important. Proverbs 22, verse 7, it says this. The rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is what? A slave. The borrower is slave to the lender. The rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is slave to the lender. In other words, the person that is in debt is enslaved to something that they have purchased in the past that they may not even be using now, may not even want now, may not have anything to do with their lives now, but they're still paying it off now. They are strapped to something in the past. Now, we did a series in the summer. If you were not here for this, I would just encourage you as much as I can. It was called Strapped. Go back and listen to this series. It was about personal finances and how to approach personal finances. Message 2 was specifically about getting out of debt. And the whole idea of the series was simply this, that we want our lives to be strapped to the right things. We don't want to be strapped in loving and serving money. We want to love and serve God. We want to love and serve our spouse. We want to love and serve our kids. And if we are strapped to debt, if we are strapped to the past, if we are strapped to a credit card, it hinders our ability to truly and perfectly love and serve our spouse and love and serve our kids in the here and now. Does that make sense? So the idea of get out of debt is simply this, that you don't want your debt to someday be carried and rolled into our debt, because then your stress becomes our stress. When you get married someday, and this is something that I don't say this in a negative way, this is really how it's supposed to be, you literally are strapped to another person. You are strapped to another person. Now, life is supposed to go like this. Well, I'm strapped to God. I love and serve God. I love and serve my spouse. I love and serve my kids. That's who I'm supposed to be strapped to. In the Bible, there is never a reference to you should be strapped to MasterCard. There's never a reference to you should be strapped to Fannie Mae. There's never a reference you should be strapped to NMSU loan structure. I don't know the company that does that. There's not that scripture ever. Because if you truly want to be strapped to God, strapped to your family, and loving and serving both of those things, it becomes very difficult to add in strapped to a credit card company, strapped to a bank, strapped to a loan, strapped to this, strapped to that. The more debt you carry in, the more stress you add to a marriage and to a family. And when your stress becomes our stress, even if that's the normal in culture, even if that's the normal way that everyone lives and everyone has debt and everyone has credit cards and everyone has loans, even if that's the normal, it still adds stress to everyone. So let's make the decision that we're not going to carry today's purchases and yesterday's purchases into tomorrow's marriage, into tomorrow's family. We're just not going to do that. Let's be the people who say, you know what? We're going to work hard to take on as little debt as humanly possible, and then we're going to make sure that as quickly as possible, we pay it off so we get out of debt. A couple ideas to help you do that is simply this. You practice restraint. Restraint means I might want those new shoes, but if I don't need them, I don't buy them. Restraint means, you know what? I would love to go out with the boys for wings, but if the money's not in the account and I have something, a bill that I have to pay in the next week, I just don't go out for wings with the boys. That's what restraint looks like. If I want it, but I don't need it, and I can say no, I say no. Jalen and I do this on a regular basis. We, not because we're in bad shape financially, but like about a month ago, we had to get new tires on our Jeep. I don't know if you know this, but tires are expensive. And we had some money in savings, so we pulled out the money and we're like, okay, we'll just pay for the tires. But I said, look, okay, I want to make sure that we put that money back into savings as quickly as possible. We didn't put it on a credit card, we just took the money out of savings and we're saying, look, so I said, now for the next month and a half, we're gonna show restraint so that we can put that money back into savings. She said, okay. And so there's been some purchases that we would normally make and some meals that we would normally eat out that we just decided, you know what, we're not going to eat out those meals. We're going to eat at home. We're going to show restraint so we can pay the money back to our savings account. That's what restraint looks like. You practice restraint. You practice sacrifice. Sacrifice looks like this. I'm going to give up something I love for something that I love even more down the road. See, we all love the idea of a great start to your future family. And so we have to sometimes be willing to say, you know, I might love Starbucks every day, but I don't need to have Starbucks every day. I'm going to sacrifice something that I love for something that I love even more. Does that make sense? And here's the deal with sacrifice. It's much better for us to sacrifice now than for us to ask our future family to sacrifice because we weren't willing to now. We practice sacrifice now. We give up something we love for something that we love even more. And practice planning. Now, you're thinking like planning, like you're talking like a budget. There's no budget when you only have $57 in your bank account. There's no budget when you're swiping your debit card and you're not sure if it actually has money enough to cover the thing. There's no budget for that. Here's the thing. I promise you, for however much money you have, you can make a budget. Budgeting is simply telling your dollars where to go instead of your dollars telling you where they're going to go. So practice planning, practice restraint, practice sacrifice, practice planning. That's how we pay off debt. So get out of debt. While you're a single person, get out of debt so that your debt doesn't become our debt, so that your stress doesn't become our stress in marriage. Second out. So we got get out. And if that's not uncomfortable enough, get out of debt. Second one is stay out of bed. Now, some of you are like, wait a minute, I think one of my problems as a single person, I think I don't sleep enough. Like, I think I should probably be getting more sleep. And if that's what you think I mean when I say stay out of bed, you're going to be very surprised. So today, stay out of bed. I want to read you a scripture from the New Testament. 1 Corinthians chapter 6 says this, flee. What's that word? Now, have you ever heard anyone say flee like that? Have you ever seen a movie where someone's like, hey, I just want to let you know there's a bomb coming behind you, and if you don't go, things are going to go really bad and you're going to get blown to death, so flee. Is that the emotion that usually is associated with the word flee? No, it's flee, you fools! You know, it's like big, it's emotional, it's loud. So Paul's like, flee from sexual immorality. And in his context, sexual immorality was any sexual conduct outside of the context of married people, husbands and wives. He says, like, anything outside of husbands and wives and sex inside the context of marriage, flee! Flee. Flee. Flee from sexual immorality. He says, all other sins a person commits are outside the body, but whoever sins sexually sins, what's that last part? Against their own body. He's saying there's something unique about sex, that it's not just a physical thing. It's not just a relational thing. There's something that happens inside of us when we violate what God planned when it comes to sexuality. There's something that actually happens in us where we harm ourselves and we harm our ability to experience things down the road, that we actually harm ourselves. Then he goes on in verse 19, he says, do you not know, because some of them didn't know, that your bodies are temples of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have received from God? You are not your own. You were bought at a price. Therefore, honor God with what? It's not on the screen yet. Therefore, honor God with your bodies. Therefore, honor God with your bodies. He simply says, look, there is a, God has a plan for you when it comes to sex. And you're someone like, well, I wish he would get it going. But he's like, look, God has a plan when it comes to sex. And anytime we move outside of God's plan, we're moving into sexual immorality and we're hurting ourselves and we are not honoring God with our bodies. Anytime we bring harm to ourselves, we are not honoring the self that God made. And so Paul would say to you, and he'd say to me when I was a single person, he would say to you as a single person, he would say, stay out of bed. And when he would say stay out of bed, what he was really meaning was simply this, that you would pursue purity. That you would pursue purity. As a 21-year-old guy, as a 28-year-old girl, as a 26-year-old guy, as a 38-year-old single lady, that he would say simply this, that sex outside of the context of marriage, it always complicates things and it always hurts someone. And since it always complicates things and it always hurts someone, why don't we make the decision that we're not going to take it out of that context? We're not going to violate God's plan. We're not going to step outside of God's plans. We're going to stay inside the context that God designed sex for. It's almost as if God said, you know what? There's like different levels of this thing. And like, it's going to be like, you know, when like sex is between consenting adults, it's going to be, you know, I mean, it's sex. It's going to be pretty good. You know, it's going to be enjoyable, but there's going to be some complications and there's going to be some weirdness and there's going to be like, do I call? Do I not? Like all that. You know, so sex between consenting adults, it's all right. And then people who actually like each other, it gets a little bit better. Yes, that's nice. And then sex, you know, gets a little bit better if you actually like love each other. Like, oh, he said I love you and she said I love you. That's great. And then people who are actually like committed to each other for a good long time, like that's going to be like really nice too. It's like gets a little bit better, a little bit better, a little better. And then God says, I'll tell you what though. This is where I planned it to be. I planned it to be amazing between husband and wife, and this is what you were meant for, but if you spend all of the energy and all the stuff on this, this gets diminished a little bit. That's what God is saying. Look, here, I'm smart enough to know this. The best reason to tell you to pursue purity is not because it makes your singleness more exciting. I've been around enough youth pastors who say, like, I'll tell you what, you know, I preach to kids, like, you know what, hey, don't have sex until you're married because that's the best way you can live single life. I'm like, I don't know. I think that's a tough sell. I think sex is pretty good. People enjoy it. You know, like I think that's a tough sell. Pursuing purity does not make your single life more exciting. Pursuing purity as a single person does set you up for something incredible in marriage. That's the reason. It's a trade. It says, I'm going to trade some excitement now. I'm going to trade some enjoyment now. I'm going to trade a little bit of passion now for woo someday. And when we don't make the trade, sometimes we miss out on something because we bring some stuff into the marriage that we weren't supposed to bring into marriage. See, here's what you know and here's what I know. That people, when they get into relationships, they will joke about and they will open up about all kinds of mistakes in their past. They will open up about bankruptcies. They will open up and joke about times where they really seriously got physically hurt, but nobody opens up and nobody makes jokes about the times that they made some mistakes sexually, where they crossed lines sexually. No one jokes about that. And the reason no one jokes about that, and the reason that we all kind of get this, even if we're not willing to acknowledge it, is simply this. The mistakes sexually come with a bigger price. The Bible is actually accurate, that we actually pay a price, that we actually harm ourselves emotionally and spiritually and relationally. We harm ourselves when we cross lines sexually. That we carry shame, we carry guilt, not because the church makes us, but because there's something inside us that responds that way. And we carry shame and we carry guilt and we carry a little bit where we just go, I don't know what this thing is, but I'm carrying it around. And if we carry that into marriage, it can hurt us. If we don't carry that into marriage because we are willing to pursue purity now, that helps us to enter marriage shame-free, guilt-free, comparison-free, innocent, like completely innocent, and just going, wow, this is exactly what God intended, and it gets better and better and better and better and more enjoyable. And this is like, that's God's plan. So we get out of debt, we stay out of debt. If you like some tips there, because I know everyone wants purity tips. You know, everybody loves this stuff. By the way, when I was an intern working in a youth group, there was a lady who worked at our church. She was gonna give a talk on purity, and she was like, "You know what, Chris? Like, can you help me come up with like an acronym for like everyday purity, like purity tips or something like that?" I was like, "Well, just call them EPTs." And she's like, "Well, that's great." And I was like, "Okay, cool." And she got up to preach the sermon, and she goes, "All right, guys, I want to talk about some EPTs." And I just realized that stands for early pregnancy test. Anyway, we're going to go with it. And so anyway, so that was my first experience with giving any sort of purity talk. Anyway, so here's some tips that help, I think, get us to a place of purity when you're pursuing purity as an adult. Number one, to set personal boundaries and talk about them. It is one thing to set your personal boundary. It is a whole different thing and takes it to a different level to let the other person that you're in relationship with know about it. Does that make sense? And if a person isn't willing to respect your personal boundaries, that person is not a person that you need in your life. If a person will not respect your personal boundaries and your personal pursuit of purity, which is a tough thing to say, you need to say, you know what, hey, you're a wonderful person. We're not going to have a romantic relationship. If they won't respect your boundaries, that's a boundary that you need to keep. Number two is to set your own curfew. I heard Alex reference this just recently in a sermon. Nothing good happens after when? Nothing good happens after midnight. Nothing good happens after midnight. When Jalen and I were dating, we set a curfew. Not because we were like super tempted to like cross lines, but we knew that there's certain times of the night where nothing good happens after, where inhibitions are lowered. Like, woo, I feel really strong and I make good decisions at 11. 11:45 rolls around and I stop making good decisions. I become the guy who really likes to jump off of things and really likes to run around. And like, I mean, like some of you who are single are like, yeah, I really like to blow off firecrackers and, you know, like fireworks and like all kinds of stuff. Like I do all of that at midnight. Yeah, that's the reason you shouldn't be with a girl that you're interested in after midnight, because you make dumb decisions. And guys and girls, we all make worse decisions the more tired we are. Our inhibition lowers as we get more tired. So because we get more tired at certain times, we should be willing to say, you know what, I'm going to set my own curfew, and we're just not going to spend time together after 11 o'clock or after midnight. Jalen and I did this when we were dating, when we were engaged, and it was so funny. So Jalen would often come over to my house after work, and she'd like say, hey, let's watch a movie, let's watch some TV. And she would often fall asleep while watching TV. And it would get to our curfew time, and I started to have a lot of fun with this. Like, she'd be asleep, and I'd be like, hey, you got to get up. You got to go. And she's like, what? I'm so tired. And I'm like, hey, you got to go. You can't be here anymore. She's like, are you serious? I'm so tired. Yeah, you got to get. We're pursuing purity, babe. Out. You know, like... And I'm telling you, it kind of became fun for me, and I doubt it was as much fun for her because she was always the one getting kicked out. And she would act like, "Oh, I'm just so tired." I'm like, "You just want to stay and, you know, be a I don't know what, but you know, like you're trying to lure me away from the Lord, you know, like you're trying to, you know, temptress, yeah, you know, like I'll, you know, I'm like, get." She had a lot of fun with it. Anyway, so here's the thing. You set your own curfew because there are times in your life where you just know, hey, I am more tired. I make bad decisions. So if you know you make bad decisions at that time, don't be with a girl that you may cross lines with. Don't be a guy that you may cross lines with, because we all make bad decisions after a certain time at night. Last one on this is simply this: to pay attention to your entertainment. If you're not in a relationship, if you're not with someone right now, you pay attention to your entertainment, because what you watch and what you read and what you listen to, it ultimately shapes who you are and what you do. Always. The music that you listen to, the lyrics that you pump into your ears affects how you view men and women. Pay attention to your entertainment. What are you watching? What are you watching on your phone when it's 11:30 at night, when it's 1 o'clock in the morning and you should have gone to bed long ago? What are you watching? What are you reading? What are you listening to? Ladies, what are you reading that maybe you shouldn't be reading, that touches on some fantasies that you have, that impacts some things under your expectations of what a guy is someday going to be? We need to pay attention to what we entertain ourselves with, because what we entertain ourselves with sets some expectations, sets some thoughts, and allows some things sometimes to take root in our minds and in our behaviors that do not need to be there. Yeah. Pay attention to what you pay attention to. And number three, the final out is simply this: to clean out your closet. Clean out your closet. See, all of us, I mean, we all know this. Every single person, every married person, we all have a junk drawer in your house. You all have a junk drawer, or you have a closet that just is kind of the junk closet. Anybody have a junk closet or a junk drawer? Yeah. If you don't, you're like, no, not me. My drawers are all beautifully arranged. Martha Stewart arranges my drawers. That's weird. Anyway, so here's the thing. We all have that thing that we don't want anybody else to see. We don't want anybody else to be around. We don't want anyone else to experience. We don't like that stuff. And here's the thing that many of us who are now on the side of being married understand, that those things that you hide for a while you're dating, they don't stay hidden for long when you get married. That closet that you have that's full of junk, the drawer that you have that's full of junk, it doesn't stay closed for long when you get married. And so Paul spoke to this, I think, in Romans chapter 12, verse 1 and 2. He says this: therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be, what's that word?
Transformed.
Be transformed by the renewing of your, what? By the renewing of your mind. He says, look, take those things that you don't want anybody to see, that you don't want anybody to know, that you actually don't really even like that much about yourself. You take those things and you submit them to God. You say, God, I don't like these things about myself. I don't want these things to destroy a future marriage. I don't want these things to destroy parenting. I don't want these things to destroy the respect of my someday son, my someday daughter. I don't want these things to destroy anything down the road. So God, I submit them to you. Would you transform in me, and would you help me to have the courage to know how to address these things and how to confront these things? Because I don't want them to be something that destroys something someday. So here's the thing. Baggage from a family of origin, it doesn't ever stay hidden or buried for long. Baggage that you have from past relationships that didn't go well, they don't ever stay hidden and they don't stay buried for long. Abuse that you suffered in your past, it doesn't stay hidden and it doesn't stay buried for long. Anger issues that get hidden during a dating relationship come out in a marriage. Insecurities that get covered up while you're dating come out in a marriage. Loneliness that gets covered up in a dating relationship, it all comes out in a marriage. All the stuff that's in the junk drawer in the dating relationship, it comes out in the marriage and it comes out in the parenting. People who say, like, well, I'm just bad at picking people. I seem to always be picking the wrong person. I always seem to be picking the wrong person. Well, what if we stopped picking and we said, hey, you know what, I'm going to put a pause and I'm just going to address that. I'm going to look at why I'm always picking the wrong person so I don't end up married to the wrong person and raising the wrong kids. Not that that really happened. But if we're bad at picking, let's not keep picking poorly. Let's put a pause on it and say, hey, I'm going to address the fact that I pick poorly. I'm going to address that. Suspiciousness, I can't trust. Well, don't carry that into a marriage. Let's deal with that now. See, here's the thing. We can decide today what we're going to carry into tomorrow. We decide today what we're going to carry into 2 years from now. We decide today what we're going to carry into 5 years from now. We decide today what we're someday going to carry into marriage. We decide today what we're going to carry into parenting. And I just think, what if we were the people who said, you know what, anger issues, I'm going to carry around anger issues no more. Unforgiveness, I'm going to carry that around no more. Suspiciousness, I'm not going to carry that around 1 second longer. Whatever I have to do to get rid of my irresponsibility, I'm not going to carry irresponsibility around anymore. Whatever I have to do to confront whatever needs to be confronted, I'm willing to do it because I understand that I'm building a life and I'm building a family today. Yeah. Now, so we're going to get out. We're going to stay out, and we're going to clean out. And here's the thing. As we close this series, here's what I just want to say. I hope that our church is known for having the best marriages. I hope our church is known for having the best parenting relationships. I hope our church is really known for the best family life ever. And I hope our church is known as the single people who get it right. And that when they start marriage right. And when they start parenting right and they start strong. I hope that's true for you. And I hope that's true for me. And I hope it continues to be true for me. But here's what I know is true. I know that it doesn't happen if we don't approach it from God's perspective. I know it doesn't happen if we don't approach it from God's plan. So let's step up to the plate. Let's pursue God's ideal even while living in our real. And let's just say, God, I want to do what you want to do. And I want my family to reflect what you have for my family. Let's follow God's plan. Let me pray for you.